This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
You know what pisses me off about you?
Quite a lot. I don't know how many episodes have started with this.
No, this is something that I think you're either on one side of the fence or the other. You are one of those assholes in PE that thought it was the fucking Olympics. I swear to God, I hated those people when I was in school.
Yeah, they'd say go for a light jog and we'd fucking sprint.
Yeah, you fucking just took off like a rocket. Like,
I remember I saw a video on TikTok, some Irish lad. Right, this is for a certain people.
Oh, yeah.
And he
yeah.
said, when the teacher said, it's a light jog, why did you feel the need to fucking sprint? Where was you going? What was your game?
Yeah. Yeah. It fucking wound me up to no end.
Some of us are competitive, some of us aren't.
I'm not competitive at all. Like, I literally would sit on the bench. Like, there's a girl I was friends with in school. And
did you ever do that?
What?
Did you ever move along the bench and catch the thing on your ass?
No.
Didn't you
the
ever do that?
Little bump thing. You got like, the little bump
on,
up
on
your hole.
Either side, there'd be two.
Yes, the little like yeah. rigid, like a rubber stopper thing.
I guarantee, right, lads listening, how many of you? It happened to me, because you'd have to slide down when someone else would sit
yeah.
and slide down. Yeah. The amount of times it got up my ass. Oh, that's funny.
It's because I didn't say anything for a second. He just left people with that. They're right. Fucking keep that. Keep that little gap. Right, so we get into today's... I can't even speak now. I can't speak.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bashara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
Right, so today we're going to be covering the murder-suicide of Pam and Kenny Carter.
I've been waiting for this one.
I know you have. And before we get into today's episode, we have a couple of shout-outs to do. So the first one goes to my co-host, Neil. I would never have known about this case if it wasn't for Neil.
Going into doing podcasting, the last thing I thought would happen is I would tell you a case what you wouldn't know. And we'd cover it.
Mm. And look at you now. Next person we need to give a shout out to is Kane.
Oh, Kane. So Kane is a mate of mine from the Speedway community. He has his own podcast. There's him and a number of people. It's a Speedway podcast called Round the Boards. He helped me with this in regards to I asked him, is there anyone in the Speedway community who might have wrote up professionally about this case, about Kenny Carter? And he put me in touch with Helen.
Yes, and that brings us to our next shout out, Helen Charlesworth. Thank you so much. Without Helen, this wouldn't have been possible to do this episode. She provided me with all the sources, so pretty much full credit goes to Helen for the research. Thank you so much. Helen has also wrote multiple books on the darker side of history in different places around the UK. And her books are available on Amazon, so go check them out.
One last thing about Helen that I love. She corrected Megan.
She did indeed. So if you're like me, you know, fucking idiot, and you're going around, and you're going around pronouncing gibbet as gibbet, well, stop it right now. It's gibbet. Okay.
So we need to ask Helen.
Made a show of herself on the podcast.
How do you say kashoo? And how do you say tongue, because that's where you're telling me I'm wrong, but you've just said you get things wrong.
Obviously, I get things wrong. I'm human.
So I could be right with them.
No, you're not. Look, we're not getting into this again. I'm not saying I'm flawless. I'm just saying you are wrong about those. Okay. So with all that out the way, are you ready to get into the case?
Yeah.
So to start with, as usual, we'll have a quick look into the background of Kenny Carter. So Kenny was from Halifax in West Yorkshire, and he was born on the 28th of March 1961 to parents Mal and Christine. Kenny also had two younger siblings, Alan and Malcolm. Now, Kenny's childhood was said to have been a difficult one. His father, Mal, was described as being a mean and callous individual. Overall, just a very domineering figure. Kenny and his brother Alan were both said to have been scared of their father. He would quite often verbally abuse them both, and they would just sort of stand there and take it out of fear that the abuse could possibly escalate to physical abuse. On Saturday, the 24th of October in 1970, when Kenny was just 9 years old, something happened to the Carter family that would completely alter their lives. So his mother, Christine, she had been in the process of redecorating their house, and during this, she had actually bought the wrong colour of paint. So along with their painter and decorator and her youngest Malcolm, they headed into town to exchange the paint that she had bought. Now, Christine wasn't actually driving her car that day, and the reason being was that the previous evening their father Malcolm had arrived home with a nail in his tyre. So on the Saturday morning, you know, instead of what he probably should have done, which was take the car to get the tyre replaced, he instead just took Christine's car when he went out. So Christine just took Mal's car. Now, they had only travelled half a mile from their home, and as she was turning a bend in the road, the tyre burst and she lost control of the car. Christine was thrown through the windscreen, breaking her neck and back.
How fast was she going?
Well, I don't know. She was turning a bend and the tyre burst, so she lost control. I don't know.
But through the windscreen?
If she wasn't wearing her belt, maybe they'd hit a wall. I don't know. Like,
well, no one wore belts then.
Oh, yeah. She was left paralysed from the neck down. Although, obviously, a horrifically traumatising event, the decorator escaped with just a few cuts and bruises. Unfortunately, though, four-year-old Malcolm, who had been sitting on the decorator's knee in the front passenger seat, sustained internal injuries and died in hospital 2 days later. So, a devastating blow for the family.
Yeah.
Really difficult. Just to add to it, not long after, their father, Mal, left for another woman.
He would have, yeah. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying, yeah,
it's
I could
just
see,
like,
that coming.
With all that shit going on, of course, something else was going to add fuel to the fire. Christine spent nearly 2 years at a specialist spinal unit at Wakefield's Pinderfields Hospital. She was still only in her 20s, and it was looking as though she was going to spend the rest of her life in hospital. So during this time, while she was being taken care of in the hospital, Kenny and Alan were looked after by their mother's parents, Gladys and Willie Hanner. When Christine did return home, Kenny and Alan were her main carers, even having to attend to her most personal needs. Now, they were still just children at this time, so...
Yeah, how old would they have been?
He was 9 when she had the accident, so if this was 2 years later, he'd be 11 at this stage, up to whatever age.
That's quick math.
9 plus 2 is a...
How do you do it?
I frighten myself sometimes. Christine also received help from their neighbours, her parents, and also a nurse that would visit once a week. She was also able to get out and about with the help of a specially adapted chair, which the boy's father, Mal, had bought for her. And Christine also went on to remarry. And the man she married was Dave Wood, and he was a foundry worker who had moved in with the family and would go on to become a stepfather to the boys. Unfortunately, though, Christine had suffered so much pain since the accident, she just couldn't take it anymore. On Tuesday, the 18th of September, 1979, Christine took her own life. And she'd taken an overdose of painkillers. She was just 35 years old. It was also said that Kenny was the one to find her.
Ah, fucking hell.
Yeah. So he's been through a lot at this stage. But some good in Kenny's life was his relationship with his grandparents, Willie and Gladys. He was close with his grandparents, and they were some of the people in his life who he truly loved and trusted. He also had stability with his grandparents. They had their own little tradition. Every Wednesday night, they would go to their grandparents for dinner. Or tea, if you're Northern.
For tea, yeah.
For tea. Now, his granny's specialities. You ready for this?
Yorkshire's.
Homemade stew, shepherd's pie, and rice pudding for afters.
I can't stand that.
You wouldn't eat any of it, would you?
No.
I mean, I'd be sorted, but you'd be like pushing the food around your plate. Oh, it's lovely, Gladys. Thank you.
I don't understand how people can eat rice pudding.
Beautiful it is.
Nah.
Now, Kenny's father, he may not have been the nicest man, but one thing that can be said for his father was that he was a very, very good coach.
He knew what he was doing at Speedway.
He did. Kenny's father knew everything about racing and how to turn everything to their advantage. Kenny's younger brother, Alan, he was in motorsport, but he was actually a road racer. And Alan was actually just 18 when he won the 250cc class in the French Grand Prix. Now, I don't know much about sports in general, but that sounds pretty young to me, doesn't it?
It's very young, but if you were to compare that to Speedway, like, so that's half the power.
Mm.
And people who are starting out at Speedway, they'd be on a 250cc when they're about 13, 14.
Mm.
By the age of 16, you've been on a 500.
Yeah.
Usually.
So Alan was a road racer and Kenny was a Speedway rider. Now, I had never heard of Speedway until I met Neil.
Hardly anyone has. Unless they live in Poland. Very big in Poland.
So, Neil, you've been a massive fan of Speedway since childhood. Do you want to give a quick description of the sport for anyone who may not be familiar?
So, it's an oval track, a dirt track, and you have four riders, the 500cc bikes. They don't have any brakes. Yeah, and Kenny was unreal at the sport. Like, I'll be posting many videos.
He was somewhat of an icon in the sport, would you say?
Yes, definitely.
So, Kenny actually started his Speedway career in the late 70s. In 1978, he rode for the Halifax Dukes in the British League season and for the Newcastle Diamonds in the National League season. And the following year, Kenny won the British Speedway Under-21s Championship. He would also go on to become a World Pairs Champion, as well as British Champion. And Neil, it was before you were born, obviously, but you've watched quite a lot of videos of Kenny racing, and your dad was also a big Kenny Carter fan, wasn't he?
Yeah, my dad knew him. How much detail do you want me to go into?
Whatever you have, go on.
So I'll say things what'll let the listeners know what type of person he was. So I think the first year he rode in the British final was in 82. He finished second overall. He had just got out of intensive care. His jaw, he'd literally just had wires taken out of his jaw. And they're interviewing him, and you can see his face is swollen, and while he's talking, he's like gritting his teeth together. And he finished second overall. In 83, I think he finished second again. In 84, he won it for the first time, but he had a broken leg. He was riding with a broken leg. He had a full cast on, and he won. I think he won it again in 85 as well. And then, obviously, that was the last time he rode in that.
Mm.
He had a bit of a relationship with an American rider called Bruce Pennell.
Mm-hmm.
It's known as the most controversial race in Speedway history. I've still never seen anything like it. I'll be posting it on our social media, but that cost him the world title. Like, he would have won it that year. My dad, he went to Los Angeles to watch the meeting, and my dad said he saw Bruce Pennell deliberately try and fuck Kenny Carter up at the start of the race and succeeded to. And my dad said, I knew something was going to kick off. He said before the race started, Bruce Pennall was delaying the start, playing mind games with Kenny. So my dad said he could feel like the atmosphere was off. Something was going to happen. And as soon as they started the race, Bruce Pennall moved out, basically to fuck Kenny Carter up. He was successful. And my dad said, I knew something was going to escalate because Kenny Carter could see steam coming out of his fucking helmet. Like, he'd got a target and that was Bruce Pennall. He wasn't looking to win the race. He was looking to knock Bruce Pennall off. And that ended up with him going down. Bruce Pennall knocked him off and the referee excluded Kenny Carter. And I think that really messed with his head. He wasn't just angry. Like, I don't know if that sent him into a spiral of depression. But yeah, that was his closest effort to being world champion and it was taken away. And then Bruce Pennall, for our American listeners, you'll know him. Because after that, he retired from Speedway.
Fell in chips.
Yeah, he was the main... He started an acting career and he was the main guy in Chips.
Mm.
I've never watched it.
I haven't actually, to be honest with you, so...
But yeah, what a piece of shit. So you've got someone young and up and coming.
And someone who's ready to kind of leave the sport.
Someone who knows he's done with the sport. But yeah, I'll post all the videos. I think I was going to say he'd have been good for the sport. You know, if he'd have gone into coaching or anything. He wouldn't have been very good as a team manager. His attitude.
My way or the highway.
Oh, right. So... one of the stories I've got is, so when I asked my dad, I said, is there anything you can tell me what's interesting or maybe it's got a bit of humour to it, you know, to explain the type of person Kenny was? And my dad said, right, the England team manager was Carl Glover. He told my dad, he said, fucking Kenny, typical fucking Kenny, arrogance. And my dad went, why, what's wrong? And he went, I phoned him up and I said, Kenny, Just ringing to let you know that you're in the England team this year and you're actually the captain. He said, you know, you'd expect him to be, you know, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm going to do my best. None of that. He went, who are the other wankers? On about who else is going to be riding for Team England. Who are the other wankers? Like, I don't think he saw any Brits as good as himself.
Very arrogant person, like.
And then another statement he said, which some people like to relate this statement as he was talking about this case. And then some people think, nah, he's just meaning because of his attitude, like what his personality is like. You know, you hate to love him, but you love to hate him.
Yeah.
His statement was, not many people have heard of Speedway, but I'll make sure they have fucking heard of me.
Yeah. And I think what you said there, it may not be connected at all, but knowing what we know now, it certainly sounds a bit, oh, you know what I mean? You can make, whether it was or not, you can make that connection in your head and you go, wow.
There's actually another one. There's rumours. I asked my dad, because I said to you, if he said this, my dad will know. And I asked my dad and he didn't. But my dad agreed with me. It sounds like something Kenny would say. But because of how Kenny was, it's very easy to make something up and make it sound like he said this. I can see him saying it, but I've never found proof, but he said it. He got into a disagreement with another Speedway rider and they got into a fight on the track. I think it was Peter Collins. It was at Bellevue. So in the Speedway community, they'll know there's a magazine called Speedway Star, which is like the main news outlet, especially back in the day before there were internet. And the front cover was Peter Collins. And apparently Kenny phoned the editor up and said, what have you got that wanker on the cover for? You'll want me on the cover next week. I've got a story for you. And then the following week, this case happened. So some people think he knew about it a week before. Now, like I said, it sounds like something Kenny would say, but I can't find any fact of it.
Yeah. So I think we can get a sense there from what Neil was saying that Kenny...
He was an arrogant little bastard.
He was an arrogant little bastard, yeah, I think that's fair to say. It was also said that Kenny and Alan tried very hard and that they were never fully satisfied. They may have been amazing riders, but they wanted to be the best. And after all, it's what their dad wanted. Now, I think like Neil was just telling us about there, between 84 and 86, Kenny's career as a rider took a bit of a hit. You brought up his broken leg. It was broken in multiple places.
Yeah, so I forgot to mention, when he won the British final, he was in agony after. He was riding and the fucking pin had came loose.
Mm.
One of the pins had came out of his leg. And he still rode and he still won.
Yeah. There's actually footage of him being carried like back off the track and put into the wheelchair. So even with that, riding with a broken leg, still winning, it didn't really seem to be enough for Kenny. He was starting to feel cheated. And I'm sure what you brought up as well too with Bruce Pennell, I'm sure had an effect.
Yeah.
Now, Kenny did consider taking up road racing, something that his brother was very excited at the idea of, but that just never really materialised. Kenny actually went in a different direction. He'd been hanging around a lot of wealthy businessmen, and maybe that was what was having an influence on him. In 1986, Kenny's sports promotion business was starting to take off, and it was believed that the business could have been extremely successful. Kenny had already signed a few notables, he had plenty of contacts, and he was getting quite a lot of media attention, and as you know, he was blessed with the gift of the gab.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's incredibly beneficial in a business like promotions. He was taking on a lot with his new business, but it was going to be Kenny's year. After 2 years of a heartbreak due to the toll his injuries had in his career as a rider, he finally seemed optimistic, like things were starting to fall into place. Another aspect of his life was his relationship with Pam. Described as childhood sweethearts, Kenny and Pam had been together since they were in school, and they would go on to marry and have 2 children together. A daughter, followed by a son. Unfortunately, though, as time went on, Kenny would start to suspect that Pam was having an affair. Now, as for his suspicions, a friend of Pam's spoke about Kenny's suspicions, stating that, quote, Pam believed marriage was forever. And she also said that she didn't believe Pam would have ever had an affair. Pam's father, Robert Lund, also commented, and he had said that he just asked Pam straight out if she'd been seeing someone else, to which Pam firmly denied, and he believed her. Kenny's brother Alan, he also didn't believe that Pam was cheating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No one seemed to think this other than Kenny, from the sounds of it.
Okay.
Alan had also noticed that Kenny had become more controlling, domineering, over everyone in his life, including Pam. Unfortunately, though, he kind of dismissed this as normal behaviour. He was so used to it, it just appeared as normal to him. He was seeing it in Kenny just as he had seen it in his father, all through his life.
Yeah.
He describes both Kenny and Mal as being, quote, a natural leader, a bit of a dictator.
I thought you were going to say a bit of a dick.
A bit of a dick. But regardless of how much Pam tried to reassure him that she had remained faithful and that the people closest to her echoed her words, Kenny couldn't control his jealousy. It was also said that Kenny didn't like to lose, on or off the track. Now, all of this was probably exacerbated by the possibility of Kenny suffering from depression. And that's very likely stemming from the fact that due to mishaps, Kenny had missed out on becoming the world champion in 84 and 85. So, if you combine his feelings of being hard done by in his racing career and the stress of a new business, also throw in his intense paranoia that his wife was cheating on him, it was becoming too much for Kenny to take. And the same can be said for Pam. She had been in hospital due to the stress that was being put on their marriage because of his jealousy and subsequent arguments. It had exhausted Pam and her nerves were being worn down. Now, Pam had never really complained about this, but Kenny was said to have been very heavy-handed with her. Kenny's brother Alan had said he doesn't think Kenny ever beat her as such, but he didn't like how Kenny behaved. And he also told him so. He was there to stick up for Pam.
Yeah. He showed in the Speedway community, but he had a nasty side as well.
Bit of a temper.
Yeah, so after that with Bruce Pennell, like he had, I don't know how many mishaps he had with Bruce Pennell, but Bruce was being interviewed at a meeting and he said, I was told by Kenny, I better not set foot in Britain again. But I was also told that Kenny didn't dislike Bruce. He couldn't get past
what had happened.
It aggravated him, but he couldn't beat him.
Oh, okay. More of a frustration thing than anything else.
That's what I was told. It weren't, but he hated Bruce. It annoyed him that much. You know, he was looking at it like, what can I do? And then anytime he got close to him, Pennell put him on his ass.
Yeah. So as for suspicions of Pam cheating on him, he was one to talk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So according to his brother, Alan, just a few months earlier, Kenny had showed up to his apartment with two other women in the car with him. Now, obviously, this doesn't mean that he was cheating necessarily, but just imagine how he would have reacted if Pam had done the same thing.
Oh, he'd have lost his shit.
Exactly. Yeah. So, was Kenny just deflecting his own guilt over to Pam? Or possibly was it just, you know, kind of a misogynistic standpoint of it's okay for him, but not for her?
I think the first one, that could be it.
Mm. It's common enough for people to do that.
Because they're thinking, look how easy it is for me.
Mm.
She must be doing, of course she is.
Yeah. Regardless of whatever his thought process was, Pam just couldn't take it anymore. On the 19th of May, 1986, after 4 years of marriage, Pam took her two young children and left their family home. Pam loved Kenny. She just wouldn't stand for how she was being treated anymore. Another point of stress in their life around this time was the fact that Kenny and Pam's home had also been burgled around this time. Now, luckily, Kenny was able to get the van's reg and the robbing bastards were caught. But still, it's just another thing in your life that you don't need, is it, you know?
When you say caught by the Carters or caught by the police?
By what?
Carters.
Carters? What's that?
The family, Carters.
Oh, Carters. Carters, you just said.
Carters.
Carters. No, like the co-ops.
Oh, okay.
A few days later, on the 21st of May, Pam returned to their home to collect some fresh clothes for herself and her two kids. As far as Pam was aware, Kenny wouldn't have been home at this time. She should have been able to get in and out and get what she needed, no unnecessary drama. But Kenny was actually inside the home, waiting for Pam to arrive. Kenny had also hidden his vehicle, so Pam wouldn't be aware that he was there as she pulled up to the home.
Hid the vehicle or hid in his vehicle?
Hid the vehicle.
Okay.
As Pam entered the home, Kenny appeared at the top of the stairs, holding a shotgun. Pam was stood in the hallway. He fired, hitting Pam in the legs. Now, despite the location of the wound, Pam tried to make a run for her car. Kenny followed her outside, where he found her lying face down after she had fallen during her attempt to escape. Kenny held the gun to her back and fired two more shots. After he had killed Pam, Kenny went back inside their home, locked the door, called his friend and sponsor, Ron Oldham. He told Ron that he had shot his wife and that, quote, you won't hear from me again, goodbye. He'd also asked Ron to look after his kids. So with receiving that news, Ron raced over to their home, just in time to hear another gunshot echo. When police arrived, they entered the home to find Kenny still alive, but he would die before he was able to receive medical attention. Kenny was laid on their bed, with a single gunshot wound to his chest. Pam's cause of death was shock and hemorrhage due to the gunshot wounds to her right lung and heart. And Kenny's wound was to his left lung.
I can't understand how she was shot in the legs and she still managed to run out of the house.
I wonder, was it more of like, rather than like shot directly in the leg, did he kind of like cut up the side of her leg?
Graze it.
Yeah, so he didn't kind of hit an artery or anything, you know what I mean? So Kenny actually left a suicide note. It read, quote, I love Pam and I cannot live separate. I'm going to kill myself now. She did love me. I'm going to join my mum. Tell my brother I love him. Don't let the kids know what happened.
Well, they're going to find out at some point.
Yeah. So Kenny's brother, Alan, he was actually away racing when the murders took place. Race officials were contacted with the news of the murder-suicide and they had to find a way to break the news to him. So they actually got someone he knew to break the news to him and thought it might be a little bit easier. And what was said to him was, quote, "Look, I've got something to tell you. Your Kenny's killed himself and Pam." What do you say to that, you know?
Fucking tell him how it is.
Yeah. Well, what do you say? Do you know what I mean? It's hard.
Your kid brother has shot himself and his missus. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I would break the news, but I don't think I'd be as blunt.
It's probably really, if you know the people, it must be, it's literally like, look it, you know? So after he received this news, Alan said he was completely numb, in total shock. I mean, he was devastated. He was not able to believe it.
Yeah.
So before Alan returned home, he still had races to compete in.
They told him before he'd finish, right?
Yeah. And he did. He went on to finish his races and apparently he did race quite well, but he says it's all a blur. He can hardly remember it.
Oh no, I wouldn't have fucking told him before. Like, I wouldn't have told him for him to then go back out on the bike. That's fucking stupid.
Yeah. But he still did it. He still got on with it. Alan said that after he found out what had happened, he was petrified to return home and face reality. But he did. Their father asked him if he wanted to view the bodies at the funeral home, but Alan immediately declined. He had never quite got over the vision he had at the viewing of his mother. With Kenny now gone, Alan was the only surviving son to his father. And unfortunately, they didn't exactly lean on each other. They didn't have a very close relationship, with the exception of his father's previous involvement in his career.
So would it be safe to say he weren't as much as a father as, like, a manager?
Yeah, from the sounds of it, yeah. Kenny and Pam's joint funeral was held in the village of Bradshaw, not far from Halifax, on the 29th of May.
Wait, joint funeral?
Yeah.
They didn't bury him together?
Yeah, as far as I know, yeah.
Fuck off!
Now, I don't know if that was done for the sake of the kids. I don't know.
Maybe, but fucking hell, that's a bit for Pam's side of family.
Look, I don't know the situation. To me, it doesn't seem appropriate.
No.
But I don't know what the family's feelings were. Maybe they're okay. You know, like I said, for the sake of the kids,
yeah,
maybe they're okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also... Go on.
I didn't know that.
You just can't spec.
I don't think I've ever heard of that happening before. Two people getting buried together when it were a murder-suicide.
So there was a massive turnout at the funeral, which, you know, not surprising considering Kenny Carter was well enough known.
Yeah.
A lot of people admired him. There was also a wreath from Pam's brother and it had a note attached. "To my brother-in-law, Kenny, may God forgive you, Adrian." Now, as for the kids, Pam's parents would get custody of them. Probably the best place for them, as they were described as great, loving grandparents, coming from a close, loving family, and, you know, they brought up four children of their own. Now, Kenny's father wanted custody of the kids, but he wasn't even really involved in their lives. It just didn't make sense for him to have them.
Yeah. And like you said, he wasn't really a father, he was a manager.
Yeah. Kenny's brother also said the same thing. He wanted the kids to go to Pam's side.
Yeah.
They'd also lived close to Kenny and Pam's house. So, again, easiest transition for the kids.
Yeah, but they've also got to go past that house.
The kids were very young at the time.
Okay.
So, luckily, I don't want to say luckily, but they were so young, they're not going to have a lot of memory of this, you know, if any.
Yeah.
So, why did he do this? Kenny was said to have changed in his final years. He was moving so fast. He had all these new people in his life, and his brother felt as though Kenny was losing touch with his roots. And his brother just wasn't keen on who he had become. Obviously, the family were in shock over this. They just couldn't understand why this had happened. Kenny's grandparents had said that in the last few days of his life, Kenny had told them that his marriage was over, but that he was fine and he was managing to cope with the situation. So along with the other elements at play that we had discussed, Kenny was also facing assault charges from the Speedway Control Board. He'd attacked his teammate, Peter Collins, after a collision early in the season at Bellevue.
So that's what I was talking about earlier?
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the downfall of his Speedway career can be attributed to Kenny's own poor decision-making. Kenny didn't employ a full-time mechanic. His bikes were poorly put together, and he was switching engine manufacturers from one meeting to the next.
He didn't have a pit crew?
No, apparently not.
That's very strange, especially at his level.
Yeah, well, his brother said that if Kenny had had a proper team behind him, he thinks he could have gone on to win 5 or 6 world finals.
Yeah.
Something else that had been bothering him was the recent death of Ron Oldham's son. One aspect of Kenny's life that did seem to be in order, though, according to his accountant, was his finances. As far as he knew, Kenny had no money troubles whatsoever. And his brother Alan, he also knew the accountant. He had been his accountant since he was 16, so he trusts him. He's no reason to suspect he's lying.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, money troubles are quite often a big cause of stress and issues in people's lives. So if you can rule that out. So with that, it's very hard to know what the final straw for him was. Kenny also didn't confide in anyone, but he did seek some sort of comfort or advice from his father. And that was in regards to Pam cheating on him, or so he thought. Now, like we talked about earlier, his father was not the most sensitive person.
Well, I don't think he'll have said, shoot her.
Well, to quote Alan, what a bastard of a father. Alan said that his father Mal's answer to everything was either fuck him off or hit the bastards. So, not good advice from a father, particularly to someone like Kenny, who was said to be very naive and impressionable. Barry Briggs, I take it you're familiar with him?
Yes.
Speedway world champion?
Yep.
Just so we're clear. So Barry Briggs, Speedway world champion, said about Kenny, quote, be careful what you say to that kid, because he will do whatever you tell him. So when asked about the situation with Pam, Kenny's father said that yes, she is having an affair, fuck her off.
Of course he did.
Yeah. Again, Kenny's brother Alan kind of came to the defense of Pam and said, like, no, he's talking bollocks. Leave it be. You know what I mean? He's not the person you want to listen to in this situation, or a lot of situations from the sound of it. Alan himself had had some troubles with his father. After Alan and his father had parted professionally, all his dad did was tell people how shit he was and that his career was done because of the split.
So it's basically, it's shit without me.
Without me, he's trash, he's done, he's fucked, yeah. Alan had also talked about he was never at ease around his father. He was nervous around him until the day he died. And it is sad because, you know, their youngest brother had died, his mother and now Kenny. You would hope that maybe that would make you really appreciate the children you do have.
Yeah.
But not Mal. All they ever seemed to get from their father was abuse and humiliation.
And support with a sport.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do the sport, fuck off.
Yeah, or hit the bastards. So looking back on the murder, Kenny's brother has said that with all the years he's had to reflect on it, he stands by what he believes. It was first degree murder. We've all had arguments and we've all, you know, lost the plot with our partners, friends, what have you. But what Kenny did was different. Quote, he was very calculating, cunning, a cold-blooded murderer. Which, yeah, seems to be the case. Kenny had driven over 20 miles to get the gun he used to murder Pam. Like we said earlier, he had hidden his car and himself so Pam wouldn't know that he was there.
Yeah.
It wasn't just some, you know, horrific overreaction during a confrontation. It was premeditated.
Yeah.
His brother Alan had also said that he's just grateful that the kids weren't with Pam at the time, because who knows? Which...
Yeah, you'd like to think he wouldn't, but...
Of course, yeah.
If I can't have her, no one can.
Well, he said that.
Would he have the same logic with his kids?
Yeah. He literally put it in a suicide note. I cannot live separate.
Yeah.
So going back to the 18th of May, just a few days before the murder, Alan had spoken to Kenny and he had said there was absolutely no signs of any trouble brewing. And that would be the last time he ever spoke to Kenny. And that Wednesday, Kenny was late to dinner. His granny had rang him to see if he was still coming over, and he had told her that he was. But he never showed. He just murdered Pam. So obviously, you know, the Carter family had been through so much.
Yeah.
You know, and with this most recent incident, you know, it was obviously incredibly difficult for Alan. And he had said that he was struggling in his races, and he said his form was the least of his worries. All he could think about was, poor Pam, nobody deserves what she suffered. How could Kenny have done this to her? He ruined the lives of two families and left his kids orphaned. It made me feel ill to think about.
Just going back to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that caused any arguments in the family, because they went to live with Pam's parents.
Yeah.
So I didn't know him, but I knew him to talk to. I knew Kenny's son. He started Speedway. He didn't do it for long. But I didn't know he was raised by Pam's parents. So, like, by the time he was riding, the nearest track would have been Sheffield, where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have had to drive an hour to start Speedway. So was he following in his father's footsteps? Because, like, it weren't like Speedway was a local community thing.
Mm.
So he must have been doing it to follow.
Possibly, yeah. Could be.
So they must not have liked that.
Maybe not. Or maybe it was kind of like, it could have been maybe viewed as the one aspect of their father that they did admire. And they did, you know, fair play to him. He did do amazing in that sport. We don't know.
I think that's where it stands, you know, and it's the same with, you know, the likes of R. Kelly and stuff. You can like the music, you can like what they do in the sport, but when they've done something so horrific, you need to be able to separate the person to the sportsman.
Yes,
or the singer or the artist, you know.
So on the 7th of August, 1986, an auction was held in efforts to raise money to put into a trust fund for Kenny and Pam's two kids. Many of Kenny's personal items were sold, including his leathers, boots, jackets, helmets, banners, along with parts of his Speedway bike. Other Speedway riders, including Neil Evitts and Eric Gunderson, also donated items. They managed to raise over £2,000. His manager, Peter Garside, bought his leathers for £245, to which he said, "I don't know what I'll do with the leathers. Maybe I'll give them to one of his loyal fans." So that's the story of the murder-suicide of Pam and Kenny Carter. This case was a very interesting one to do. You have Neil on one hand, who viewed this through the eyes of a Speedway fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I from the side of true crime, and how this part of his life seems to be kept almost hidden away.
I can tell you word for word how it's portrayed in the Speedway community.
Mm-hmm.
It's very black and white. Like, I believed it. I'll fess up, you know. I didn't have any reason to not believe it. But as soon as we started doing true crime and, you know, I started listening to you tell the cases, the more I thought about this one, I was like, it's never that black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And just to make sure I was correct, I phoned my dad and I said, this is what I remember it being, like, how it was told in the Speedway community. And he said it back to me word for word, how I said it. He found out his wife was cheating on him, so he shot her. He phoned his main sponsor. He said, "I've just shot her and now I'm going to shoot myself." Hung up and shot himself.
Mm.
So you do have people who believed.
And I know you said it to me only the other day when we were talking about this. Let's go with that. Let's go with it that Pam cheated, so he shot her. You still can't do that. Like, it's...
She still doesn't to die.
Exactly. There's no justification.
Shoot yourself. If you're married and you find out your wife's cheating, if you see that's the only option you have, shoot yourself. Why have you shot her?
Yeah.
Them kids have lost the mother now.
Exactly.
Like,
she, right.
You're not just affecting her, you're affecting the kids.
Let's say she was cheating. She was having several affairs in his mind or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Does that affect her as a mother? Was she still a good mother? Like you've just said, you're taking a mother away from two kids.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for it.
Yeah, the more you think about it, the way it's portrayed, how it's black and white, it still doesn't make sense.
No. This is about someone who was concerned with himself and how it affected him.
Yeah.
Now, I know that in doing this case, there might be some Speedway fans who are not overly keen on hearing the details, but I think it's...
Move on. Like...
I think it's incredibly important to remember that people are complex. Like Neil just said, you have to be able to separate the artist, the sportsman, what have you, from the person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We see one side of them. There's a whole other life behind closed doors. You can be an amazingly talented person and still commit extremely cruel and unforgettable acts.
Yeah. One more thing I want to add, because it's not nice to talk about, but I don't like how it is shunned away from the Speedway community.
It's a matter of fact.
Yes. So when you said you're going to take this case up, I contacted, I'm not going to name them, but there was people who knew Kenny, spoke to Kenny, you know, they'd have known stuff what happened in the background. And I've messaged and emailed, I don't know how many. Not one person has got back to me. And on a worse note, some of them blocked me.
Mm.
Like, you didn't even need to tell me about anything. You could have just said,
I'm sorry, I don't want to talk about it.
I hate talking about it. I don't want to talk, I don't want anything to do with it. They literally blocked me like I'm some scam artist.
Mm.
And it's like, I'm just asking for facts.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, you're protecting Kenny by keeping your gob shut when you should be speaking up to protect Pam.
Absolutely. I fully agree with you. And I think regardless of which side you're coming from, Pam deserves to be remembered.
So now I've said my piece. I wanted to make sure that I got that said at the end.
Mm.
Can we please move on to an oddity now?
Yes, we can. So for the oddity today, we're going to talk about Mary Ann Bevan.
Mary Ann Bevan?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know that one.
She was known by a different title. See if this rings a bell.
Okay.
The Ugliest Woman in the World.
Well, that's some fucking title, isn't it?
Yeah. So Mary actually had a condition, and the condition was acromegaly. Now, acromegaly is a condition in which the pituitary glands overproduce growth hormones. And this can cause the hands and feet to swell, and bone structures can change, and your facial features basically just become more prominent.
Bone structure changes?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So it's just like, kind of like gigantism.
Yeah,
type of thing. It's just, yeah. So there, obviously there's a lot more detail to it, but it's not the most pleasant condition for a person to have to go through.
So she looked like Andre the Giant?
Some of her facial features were more protruding.
Okay.
Do you want to look it up for sex so you can see?
Okay, now.
So before Mary became known by the extremely unflattering title, she was married to a man by the name of Thomas, and they had 4 children together. But unfortunately, Thomas died unexpectedly in 1914. So, you know, Mary's left on her own to support 4 children. Not fucking easy, is it?
Mm.
And with her condition further affecting her physical appearance, she decided to enter the contest of the ugliest woman in the world. Now, she beat out 250. She beat out 250 competitors. So, the original advertising placed by a British agent for Barnum & Bailey's circus read, Wanted, ugliest woman, nothing repulsive, maimed or disfigured, good pay guaranteed, and long engagement for successful applicants. Send recent photograph. I mean, it is truly terrible that Mary had to put herself out there to be gawked at by assholes, but I think put some fucking respect on her name. She did what she had to... She did what she had to support her children. Fair play to her.
Yeah.
And that's the brief story of Mary Ann Bevan, the ugliest woman in the world.
Now I've seen the photo. She looks familiar.
Does she? Fuck's sake. Oh, you think I read about that? No,
someone might have used her as a meme on Facebook or something.
Oh, nice.
At some point. I don't know. I've seen that photo.
There you go. There's the case of Marianne Bevan.
Well, it's not the case of Marianne Bevan.
There's the story of Marianne Bevan.
I know I usually do the exact same thing. I use it. Yeah. Thanks for that. But thank you for covering Ken and Pam. Ken and Pammy. Ken and Pammy. Fuck.
Love it.
Kenny and Pam. I've got a feeling 99.9% of our listeners will not have heard of it.
Yeah, well, I think because it's not as well known, I hope I did the case justice. Please let me know if you think I did, or if you do happen to know the story a bit better, please let me know if there's anything you feel I should have included.
And any facts I included, they're from my father, right? So I will link his address.
Send your hate mail to him.
No, well, yeah, thank you for that one.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.